I first moved to the area in 1981. I'd been a sort of stranger to the Eden Valley before that. I started working as a water bailiff on the Eden and tributaries in September 1981. Mm. And a couple of years later, I bought a small house in Temple Sowby and lived there for about 13 years. So that was very close to Acorn Bank and Crowdundle Beck. I remember a few years after being there, maybe in my early 30s, I had a spell of doing a bit of running, and some mornings, not very many, but I'd get up and a bit earlier maybe and get my running gear on and go for a run from Temple Sowby and down past the tannery and along to Acorn Bank through the fields, run around the woodland track near the beck,
yes,
and then all the way back on the more or less on the big circular route, mm, back on the road, and I think it was about 3 miles, and then by that time I was ready for a bath and then breakfast and away on after that. It's a good way to keep yourself feeling fit. I don't think I could do that much now. I probably struggle to run a mile, never mind 3 mile,
right,
or even less than that.
And you're still running?
No. And the job I do now is sampling water for the EA, and that involves an awful lot of driving, all day, drive, all over the Cumbria, and it's a huge area that we cover. I've been doing that for, I think, 13 years now. I had 30 years in as a water bailiff, and then sort of sadly it all ended. They cut back severely on them, and I was sort of first in line to be moved, and luckily there was some jobs in another department, so I moved into that.
That's all with the environment.
It is, yes.
Well, it certainly is a water bailiff. I don't
well, know. It was... we were first called water bailiff, and then we were known as fisheries officers. It was a law enforcement role, really. That's
right.
The main thing, law enforcement to do with fisheries,
the
legislation to do with fish and fisheries.
Catching poachers,
that was a main task, really. Monitoring anglers, checking fishing licences and making sure people aren't taking fish in winter when they shouldn't, when they're out of season. Making sure people maybe weren't using illegal bait and adhering to the size limit, although we never found anyone taking anything small.
Your role since then has been a water sampler?
That's right, taking water samples.
Mm-hmm.
We take them from various places in the rivers,
mm-hmm,
some of them in the lakes, and septic tanks,
uh-huh,
groundwater dips from groundwater samples from people that have boreholes. Some farms have boreholes, not
right,
all farms, and not all farms that have boreholes get sampled.
Is that to look for pollution?
Looking for nitrates and any pollutants in water, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
We do groundwater dips, which is measuring how far down the groundwater is.
Yeah.
Like the level of the groundwater.
Right.
And we do rain gauges,
mm-hmm,
which is only once a month. We record them nearest to the end of the month or to the first of the month.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite nice, a nice change.
Mm-hmm.
We do seawater sampling for bathing waters. That's from May till middle of September. There's a few beaches they get done.
St.
Bees and sea scale and...
Mm-hmm.
Haverig and Walney and Sylecroft, and even Windermere Lake is classed as a bathing water, so we do that.
Well, that's got into the news a bit,
hasn't
it? Yeah.
We do that one, and we do Coniston's a bathing water, but that's just from May till September.
Right.
The sampling's water in the rivers and some of the lakes. It's just a everyday job. And another thing we do is insects sampling in spring and in autumn. That's a 3-minute kick sample, and it involves standing in the river at a designated place and scuffing the gravel with your wader, Wellington wade about, and then holding a fine mesh net downstream of your foot, and then the scuffing up and disturbing of the gravel that causes the insects to drift back into the net, and then they're caught, and then they're put into a white tray, and the gravel and the stones and weed and leaves are taken out by with tweezers, and then all the insects are gathered up into a net and then put into a pot, and then taken to the laboratory at Penrith, and then we preserve them there, and then eventually a scientist would look at them under a microscope and roughly count what numbers and definitely what species there are, and roughly what sort of numbers of each species, and it's a bit of a quick health check really, and you know, if there was no insects there, then alarm bells would be ringing and they'd be wondering why. Normally there's a good number of insects, and generally I think it's quite a good sort of sight to see. It's quite a lot of insects. Some of the fellbecks have got not a lot in, but
how far up do you go?
They are a bit sterile, some of the fellbecks on the Lake District area. Crowdundle doesn't have a kick sample. There's one on the Eden at Temple Sowerby Bridge. That's an annual one.
That's where you were today.
I was there today, earlier on. But I wasn't doing a kick sample, but a water sample there. I took about a dozen bottles, different bottles. So, when I was at Temple Sowerby Bridge there, I saw some otter footprints.
When was this? Today?
Today. No surprise. It's quite a... You more chance now of seeing otter footprints than mink footprints. The mink have sort of really declined, and the otters have come back and are very widespread now.
Are the two things related?
They're not related.
If they're getting rid of the mink, does that help the otters?
I think the otters are sort of a bit more sort of dominant. I don't think mink like it where there's otters about, but the otters have, and people are more aware of it, and to try and get water voles back in certain areas where there would have been water voles, and RSPB and Eden Rivers Trust, Cumbria Wildlife Trust, they've all been involved in, and the Environment Agency in this few projects to release water voles, and then they'll release some water voles, some captive water voles.
Do otters eat water voles too?
They probably would if they got the chance. They probably would, but the problem with the mink is that they're so small, especially the female mink, they can get down the burrows of these water voles and catch the adults and the babies inside the holes, so they're quite vulnerable to mink.
The otters will be eating, what sort of things are the
frogs,
otters eating?
Frogs, they love frogs, especially at this time of the year in spring, when the frogs are very evident in all the marshy land and the ponds, the spawning. They're so vulnerable to otter predation. They'll be scoffing the heads off on frogs. They'll be eating them. They'll be really, really eating them a lot. They'll have had some of the otters will have had a bit of a lean winter, I would think. You know, when rivers are in flood, and you know, it's a long winter for everything, and come spring and they come across a big pond full of frogs, and they'll know they're there, and they'll, you know, keep going back for a good feed. And then you can see in the otters' droppings, they're called sprains. And a posh name for poo, sprained. And black, about the size of your little finger, full of little tiny bones. And a lot of them bones will be frog bones.
Right.
And it depends on the time of the year and what they've been eating. And then sometimes you'll see it's full of fish scales, full of little tiny, maybe vertebrae bones of fish as well. They like frogs, they like eels, but they like salmon as well. They like any fish they'll tackle and eat. They even take salmon. I didn't think they would, but they do. I've seen it a few times where there's been a salmon and the otters had its otter's bite, and it's known as the otter's bite, and quite often they take a good old feed out of the shoulder of the fish, and it's so big that it can't possibly have it all. had to tackle them, there's no doubt. My granddad said, oh, they always just eat eels, they don't bother salmon, and I always believed him, but it's been proved differently since I got to know it.
It depends how many eels there are.
Well, eels have declined terribly. You know, they used to be incredibly common, the eels. 30-odd years ago, there was 40-odd years ago, there was vast numbers of eels. And then they had this eel virus. And
when was that around?
I think it started about 30 years ago. A big decline in them. Huge decline.
And nobody knows what caused the virus?
Not sure, I don't really know, but they have declined, but I think they are coming back a bit, there are the eels. I mean, when we do some electric fishing surveys, you know, there are certain places there are quite a lot of eels.
What's electric fishing?
Oh, well, that's another task that we do. Is they have designated sites, and some of them are annual sites and some of them are maybe on a six-year site. It involves electrocuting the water and wading upstream and catching the fish as they get temporarily stunned, and then they drift back into a net. And then as soon as they're removed from the electro field or taken out of the water, the fish sort of react as though they've never been stunned and they're completely unharmed, and then they're put into a keep box. And then when the section's been fished through, it's usually between 40 and 50 metres, and sometimes it's fished through twice, occasionally three times, and then all the fish are very carefully measured and see what species they are, and the catchers say, there's a woman scribing, and the catchers would say salmon 130, it's all measured in millimetres, a trout 60, and it goes on and on and on like that until they've either got a number that they don't need to measure everyone, every fry doesn't always have to be measured. Once they've got, I think, about 100 fry measured, I don't think they need to bother everyone, so they just count the number of fry, but they do need to say whether it's a salmon or a trout fry. From about July onwards, you can tell if it's a salmon fry or a trout fry because of the shape of the tail of the salmon, and also the little tiny silvery scales on a baby salmon, and also on a brown trout. It's got a little red adipose fin on. That's the fin above the tail. That's quite interesting, but I've not been involved with that much this last few years.
Are any of these species evident in Crowdundle, or is it?
It's a good river, is Crowdundle, for fish. It is. It always was a very, very good river for fish. There's good variety in there. There's all the usual types. There's the salmon go up there. There's brown trout in there. Eels are in there.
Right.
There'll be lampreys in there. There'll be bullhead.
Is that a type of
lamprey? It's a bit like an eel. Mm-hmm. It's a bit like a giant sort of worm that lives under the mud.
Right.
River lamprey, a brook lamprey. And they're about between 4 and 6 inches long. A bit like a tiny smooth snake.
Like grass snake. Yeah.
It's a tiny thing though. A slow worm almost.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Tiny thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very silvery.
If I knew what I was looking for in Crowdundle Beck, I could find some of these.
Usually, only if they're spawning, that you can see a little ball of them spawning. I've seen it a few times when they've been spawning, and they choose very fine gravel, and there can be a cluster of these lampreys spawning, and they're sort of almost like wrapped around and knotted around each other. And I've seen as many as about 50. In one place, and I've seen it just maybe half a dozen times, but apart from that, then you wouldn't see a lamprey, only by electrofishing, which draws them out of the mud.
Right, because they don't like the electricity.
No, it brings them out. It brings them out. And sea lampreys, they come up the River Eden. It's quite amazing. It's an ancient species, a sea lamprey, And they're spawning, they're visible spawning. They're very large things. They can be up to 3 foot long. Great, huge things, quite scary. With great big rasping mouths on them as well. And they can cling on to salmon and suck the goodness out of them. And you know,
are they parasitic then?
They are. They catch things like doing that. Yeah.
Right. Wow.
But I don't think they'll be up Crowdundle, I don't think.
No, crayfish, I've heard there's a crayfish.
Yes, there ought to be crayfish. I've not seen crayfish in Crowdundle, but there ought to be.
Yeah,
there certainly ought to be. Yes, it's a great beck, is Crowdundle. It's a very long beck. It starts away up on Crossfell. It goes right down. It's joined by its major tributary, Milburn Beck. That's just above Newbegin Hall. So it's once it gets joined by Milburn Beck, it's, you know, it's a good sized beck, especially in winter, or especially if it's in a flood.
Yes.
And Milburn's quite a good beck. That's a nice beck for fish. Mm-hmm. A lot of trout go up there.
Is that private fishing up there?
It will be. It'll all be owned by the by whoever owns the land. There's no fishing club has the fishing rights. It's just owned by the whoever owns the land. I used to occasionally fish on the roadside when I lived at Temple Sowerby. Occasionally, if it was just after a flood, I'd go and try and catch myself a trout. But I've been back to that a few times, and where you could get in, it was all grass, and now it's actually a massive thick bramble patch. The whole thing is totally impenetrable, and you wouldn't be able to get near to the river edge.
So
it's quite incredible, really.
Is that near Acorn Bank?
It is, just below the gates of Acorn Bank.
Right.
Yes, all that was grass.
Uh-huh.
And now brambles have come. And it's not a bad thing. Brambles are a good thing. There'll be all sorts in there.
Uh-huh.
And keeps people out, I suppose.
Yes.
But, I used to catch one or two fishing in there after a flood or on a flood.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of free water right on the roadside. Although I was a member of Penrith Angling Club as well, but it was a bit of a change being able to use a worm in there, because Penrith's fly only, you see.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Like a bit of variety. Not a purist.
That's not cheating then.
No, I'm not a purist. It's a bit of a change of technique. And,
yes. Has there been a big change in the number of species then?
There's been a huge decline in fish, especially salmon.
Mm.
Sadly, there's a massive decline.
Mm.
Probably declined, I would think, 80% decline.
Mm.
Yeah, huge decline in salmon. No one really knows why for sure.
Mm.
I think it's like a combination of reasons.
Mm.
But I think it's something in the sea that's altered. It must be to cause that sort of alteration. Because there's such a lot of good work being done in the rivers.
Mm.
And it's had the medicine, but it hasn't really responded to the treatment. You know,
So
the EA and Eden Rivers Trust, the EA's funded quite a bit, and Eden Rivers Trust have funded a lot. And between them, they'll have fenced off, especially Eden Rivers Trust, they'll have fenced off probably 100 miles of river now, which is incredible, that. It keeps stock out of the river, and it allows the river banks. You get this buffer zone, and the wider it is the better, and that allows everything to come back and grow up, and it doesn't get grazed, and willows and alders come back, and bluebells come back, and you get all sorts in the river edge. That's just how it sort of would be, you know, if man had left the earth, really. Another one or two barriers have been removed, not just one or two, but several man-made barriers.
Weirs.
They've been taken out, and that gives fish a better access, better chance of getting up without using too much energy.
Mm.
And in some cases, it was a total stopper where fish couldn't get up. There was quite a hindrance, some of the man-made barriers. The natural barriers aren't tackled and aren't altered.
Yeah.
That's like a natural thing. But any man-made barrier has been a target. And they've successfully removed quite a lot.
Is there anything about the environment of Crowdundle Beck that you sort of particularly like? Is there a, it, as a as a sort of place to go and relax, or are you talking about at the beginning, you talking about running around there? And
I very much admire the snowdrops. It's absolutely incredible, is that?
Yeah.
It's, there must be, I don't know, a million snowdrops. It's a guess.
We had snowdrop weekend, and I was giving clickers to the kids, and I was sort of saying, don't try and count the snowdrops, but maybe I should have.
And then after the snowdrops, it's the wild daffodils, and they're incredible as well. Yes. Amazing. What a beautiful sight.
Yeah.
It really is.
And the ransoms, the
a lot
wild
of the
garlic.
Wild garlic, yes. You can certainly smell that now. I've been around today near Carlisle, and it's growing quite rapidly, and it's certainly got quite a hum with it, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
It has, yes. And then there's such a lot of lovely old oak trees along Crowdlundle Beck. Some of them are, you know, ancient things, and probably, I think, 200 year olds, there must be, and great harbours for all sorts of creatures.
Yeah.
I know there's one or two badger holes near the beck, and massive fortresses and huge holes, you know, like little bears must be in there, and it's as safe as houses, you know, they'd never be ever dug out by any badger diggers in there, they'd never get them. They're so safe, and badgers have come back in big numbers compared to what they were 40 years ago. But a long time ago, before I was married, I was aware that there was a badger set below Acorn Bank Cottages. And I'd been myself to watch them a couple of times, sort of fascinated by them, really. Quite a bit of entertainment. And anyway, told my wife to be about it, and she told her mum and dad, and they came all the way from Ambleside and to my cottage at Temple Sowerby, and we walked from there all the way over to the Acorn Bank Cottages, across into the wood, only maybe 100 yards or so from the road, and we laid down, all four of us, and then waited, and then we were rewarded by a great load of badgers coming out, and I think there'd be, I don't know, four or five or six, and they were sort of playing around and chasing each other for quite a while, and we were there watching them till we'd sort of seen enough, and then we just crept away. I think it got towards dusk, and away we went. And my mother-in-law, Fiona, she later made a little sewing thing, she called it, she said the date was on, it was in July, I think it was 1996, and she said the day we saw badger, and she embroidered a badger on this little, like a little placemat, I would call it, and we've still got it somewhere. She was a very skilled needlewoman, she was, so quite a nice little reminder of that date. Nice little black and white face.
Well, that's a lovely story, thank you. It's really nice.
Well, it once suffered from a bad flood at Crowdlundle Beck. I think it would be in the early 90s, maybe, well, no, late 90s, because I remember borrowing my wife's horse wagon, because my car was in the garage. And believe it or not, I drove the horse wagon. She had a big wagon then. Well, it was a Dodge, a decent sized wagon for horses. And I drove it up to the golf ball up on Dunfell, where the aviation station is. And I left it below the gate because there's a locking gate there. I didn't want to get locked in. But there was three or four of us, and we had to see what damage this flood had done to the becks, because there'd been an absolute cloudburst up there. Devastated it. I call it modern weather. We didn't get weather like that. I think it'll have happened. We'll have had massive floods in the past, but I think nowadays it's more frequent than it used to be. And we went away up there, and I left the wagon up there, and they went to look at another beck, and I walked all the way back down to Lownthwaite Bridge, which was a long way. I was meant to meet them at Lownthwaite Bridge, so I walked all that distance back, and the footbridge away up near Wythwaite in the woods, that had been knocked out completely, flattened, and
just by the rain.
They're either huge floods and gravel and trees pushed over.
Right.
Made a real mess of everything. Mm-hmm. Sods in the beck and sods in the fields, and mm-hmm. turned everything upside down. So bad news for fish is all that. Very bad news. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I went down to Lowndes-Thwaite Bridge and meant to meet them, but they weren't there, so I carried on walking up the road, and I got to about Millburn before I caught up with them. And they saw me, and they gave me a lift back, and went all the way back up to pick the horse wagon up on Dunfell. Quite a walk that was that day.
Yeah.
And I remember going away up there and seeing loads and loads of mushrooms on the way up towards Dunfell. Absolutely loads of them.
And they're not usually there.
Well, it was quite surprising to see as many as that.
Right.
It really was large numbers.
Mm.
It was,
right.
Yeah.
Just an upheaval from the mud and
everything. I don't know. There was a lot. And one thing I used to do when I was in fisheries was to count the salmon reds and look for salmon and look for signs of anyone poaching. And every autumn, in late November, certainly end of November, I'd walk away up from Lowndes-Thwaite Bridge right away up onto the fell to try and record the number of spawning reds where the salmon had been digging in the gravel, and record numbers of fish seen as well. And one thing that I used to look out for was black grouse, and every time I went I saw some. There was not a lot. You'd see some though, you'd see three or four, five maybe, but you would see them.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a thrill, because it was the only area that I knew where there was any, didn't see them anywhere else.
No.
But they're a great thing, is a black grouse, and a black grouse are a very rare bird.
Yeah.
They have partly come back in some areas. They are slightly better than they were. There's a lot of research being done on them, a lot of habitat work being done on them by the estates over in Teesdale. A lot of gill planting has been done. They've sort of realised what the foods that they like, rowan berries and birch buds and larch buds. A lot of planting been done with them in mind.
Is that by the Environment Agency?
No, that'll be part of probably a stewardship scheme for farms or for an estate.
Curlews?
Yes, there's curlews mm-hmm. away up above Wythwaite.
Mm-hmm.
When I went up there, they'd gone.
Mm-hmm.
They normally go back. They always say that the curlews leave the moor before the 12th of August, before the grouse shooting starts. The curlews have already gone. But there's a friend that lives at Wythwaite, and he sees them every summer, and he knows that they're around, the curlew up at the Wythwaite area and up on those sort of allotmented land away up above Millburn.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ideal area for curlew.
Tell you what I used to see when I was a girl, peewits.
Yes.
Hardly seen any of
those now. Huge decline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, massive decline in peewits.
Right.
You know, there's an awful lot of threats to lapwing eggs and lapwing chicks. I mean, years and years and years ago, there wouldn't have been hardly any buzzards.
Right.
You know, 40 years ago, they were not really as common as they are now. You know, they are really quite common now. I mean, they're marvellous birds.
Yes.
Lovely things to look at. You
yeah.
see two or three buzzards wheeling around in the thermals on a spring day and calling that mewing sound. It's a sight to remember. It's a sight to watch.
Yeah.
You get binoculars on their wings and you can look at them, and they're just like a little eagle, really.
Yes.
And they're a lot of interest. You know, they've got a massive nest, and they've got a very varied diet of a buzzard. It will take from worms, lizards, carrion, young rabbits, dead rabbits. possibly. I even once saw a buzzard pick a jackdaw off a fence post.
It
just went along and plucked it off a fence post and sat down and started mantling it.